Welcome to A to Z Jobs, the podcast that delves into the fascinating world of careers, one profession at a time.
In each episode, we'll deep dive into a specific profession, exploring its history, requirements, challenges, and rewards.
So get ready to expand your horizons, challenge your perceptions, and discover a world of possibilities. I'm Roxy.
And I'm Nate.
And we're excited to host you on this journey.
Have you ever wondered what it takes to get the nightly news to air? In this episode, you'll meet Brian, an editor of an Australian TV network. Brian will share his journey and experience through the film industry, the importance of self-education, steps to build an industry network, and how just giving something a go can build you a career.
Hi, Brian. Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Roxy. Thanks, Nate. Great to be here.
Let's jump straight in and find out what you do for a living.
Okay. Well, what I currently do for a living is I am what's called a CAF program maker. In other words, I'm a video editor, and I work at the ABC, doing current affairs, specifically for 7:30, formerly known as the 7:30 report, which is what most people call it, but we have to call it 7:30 because that's its official name these days. So
it's funny when you're on a production of the specifics that you've got to stay on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Got to stay on brand. Yeah.
Do you get to work closely in the studio with all the reporters, or to being editor, you're a bit separate to a lot of the actual?
So, there's a few different kind of areas, I guess, of production when it comes to the 7:30 report. So you've got your reporters, you've got producers, they sort of manage the reporters. You've got supervising producers, and you've got the executive producer who oversees the whole show. So that's sort of on the, I guess, the editorial side. And then you've got the crew, which is, you know, camera ops, sound ops, and editors. And then you've got the actual studio crew, who are the directors, the vision switchers, who put the show live to air. The editors are most in contact with the reporters and producers, sometimes the camera guys and sound guys, virtually never with the actual studio crew, the directors, because they're in a completely separate studio and we have really nothing to do with them. But most of the time, our day-to-day tasks involve working directly with the reporters and the producers. To make sure that, you know, we have everything we need as editors, and to make sure that I guess sometimes we get asked early on, before the actual script is written, that the reporters or the producers will come up to us and ask us for our input. Sometimes they need some help conceiving of ideas, like, we need to do a recreation or a reenactment. How do we do that and not make it look naff, you know? So so they can talk to us, they can talk to the camos. We can provide previous examples of work that we've done as individual editors or we've done on the show or from some other completely different show altogether, you know? So we try to collaborate and try and come up with something new and interesting and compelling, yeah.
It's really interesting the directors don't get that involved with you.
Yeah, the director in this sense is just someone who is queuing up the vision. They will communicate with the host and say, all right, you're on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know, hello, welcome to the program. Tonight we've got such and such a story. This report to you comes from, you know, Emily Baker and Ravine Hutchin. And then they queue that package and that will go to air. So they manage that process.
So you'd have pretty tight turnarounds, I'd imagine, then, because you're working on sort of a show that's on nightly. Is there a rhythm to your day? What does a day-to-day task look like for you?
There are several different tasks that we do as editors. So we can do packages, which is typically a bunch of interviews strung together with a narration from the reporter and vision overlaid over the top to make it look interesting, or graphics to provide, you know, stats and figures or you know, here's a statement from someone who didn't want to be interviewed by us, you know, boom, you know, put that up on the screen. So we put those together, we add music to it, we do our own sound mixes and color grades as well. So we have to kind of take care of all of that. So as far as post-production goes, we're a bit of a jack of all trades, but kind of a master of none in that sense. So, packages is one thing we'll do. Interviews is something else we'll do. If we are given a package, sometimes we can get, you know, days or weeks to cut those, depending on how complex they are or how, you know, legally kind of fraught they are. Sometimes we send an edit to the lawyers to make sure that we don't get sued for one reason or another. So with a package, sometimes, we get days or weeks. Other times we'll have to get a package cut in one day. And that can be quite stressful, but if a package goes for say 7-8 minutes, that doesn't stress me out too much these days. When I started, I was just a mess, but these days, if I know that it's that long, and if it's been tightly scripted so that there are minimal changes later on, I can happily go through that at the start of the day, get my vision together, read the script, put out of bed, put the music down, and send it out to them at, say 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that way the reporter can look at it, make any changes. The supervising producers can look at it. The executive producer can look at it. And if they're all happy with it, ideally I'll have it sent for the studio director to check, do like a bit of a technical check to make sure the sound levels are okay and the channel mapping is right on the sound. And that'll all be done by, say, 7 o'clock, and it can go to air at 7:30 and everyone's happy. So that can happen. there was one of the other editors, Fred, had to cut a story in one day the other week, not a few months ago, actually, about this woman called Catherine Folbig, who got out of prison after 20 years in jail for wrongly being accused of killing her own children. It's a very dark subject matter. And we knew that she was going to get released at some point, or that it was very likely. And so the host, Sarah Ferguson, had written quite an extensive script, had interviewed various people. So all the elements were kind of there, but we didn't expect her to get released on this particular day. And that news came out in the morning, and Fred, the editor, came into work at 10 o'clock instead of 11. And he cut that and just got it sent, I think at about, finished it, I should say, at about 7:20 maybe.
Wow.
Now I should say that I said before, 7-8 minutes, that's fine. I can handle that. Because generally to edit 1 minute of a 7:30 package, you should allocate about 1 hour, right?
Wow.
Fine. That's how you budget your time. The Catherine Folbig story was 18 minutes, all right? Like, Fred is a freak. I don't know how he managed to do that. And I hope the producers don't get any ideas that... just because Fred can do it, that all the rest of us can do it. Anyway, that's a lot of pressure to handle in one day. That's at the real extreme end of what a typical day would look like. But otherwise, we can be doing things like, ingesting vision, just doing checks on making sure it's all right. We do other things like a network tease. We call it a network tease. So it's like a little 20 to 30 second clip that goes on 7 p.m. news about 15 minutes before the show goes to air, so that people can go, hey, look, that's what's coming up. Stay tuned. And interviews often happen usually kind of late in the day, so maybe 4 o'clock and onwards. And they can be anywhere between like 5 minutes or, 12 minutes or more. And, provided they don't go too far over that time, although they can, then we can quickly cut those and get those ready for the evening's bulletin.
Yeah, it's incredible. Even 8 minutes, like I'm thinking last time I did an 8 minute, like even movie of some kind, it took me 2 days. And editing these podcasts, I'm getting quicker. But like even 8 minutes of talking, you know, that takes me 20 minutes. So it's not
Well, you do get sort of a, I mean, you do get a bit of a rhythm down, and you do get a sense of what the you know, what the decision makers like the producers and the EP. You get a sense of what their tastes are like after a while, and I've built up a bank of music, and I've put them into different categories, you know, like, you know, depressing, slightly uplifting, drone, way too happy, like just all these different kinds of things. If I need them, if I need them quickly, I generally try to find or try to source new music just for my own satisfaction. Mm-hmm. But you know, on a same day edit, when you need to find something quickly, I've got a few, you know, guaranteed tracks that will work.
So you're not only doing all of that, you're also finding your own music. There's no database that's provided for you.
No. So yeah, so there's a bunch of music libraries. Like there's Extreme Music, there's Beatbox, there's Audio Network, there's West One, and I use those websites to build up a like a playlist of tracks that I like. Usually using those categories I mentioned before, and if I really get stuck, I'll email them, and they're usually really quick to get back with some options. So that's really helpful, because music is probably the most time consuming.
Yeah. I've got like 6 folders called film music or royalty free.
Yes.
And then notes that go with them.
Yeah. No, it's so important. And it can make or break a story. And sometimes, you know, you spend all day editing and you're like, okay, I'm happy with this. It's fantastic. It was a lot of pressure. You know, it's like 7:10 now, but I reckon they'll like it. And then someone will come along and say, yeah, just not sure about the music and the intro. Have we got any other options there? And
it's just, a whole re-edit.
So, you always got to have backup options. Otherwise,
But that's the thing. You're not only telling the story, but it sounds like you're also fitting the creative brief of at least 4 people at a time, you know, and that's hard.
And I think... I think current affairs editing as well in particular is very different from, say, your typical 7 p.m. news.
How did you get started in all of this?
Well, how far back do you want to go? Because I've had quite a few. Like I said before, I'm currently an editor, because I'm just conscious that, you know, it's probably going to change at some point, because my career's kind of gone all over the place.
That is the point. And nobody's had a straight line. Yeah. So if you are happy to talk about your journey and the key points into it, not specifically how you got into this, but maybe the steps that you got.
Yeah. To move all right. Into it. I'll sort of give you the elevator pitch version of how I got to where I am. So this is like 20 years of, you know, summing up. I started life thinking I was going to be an artist when I got out of high school. Right, my dad's an artist. He taught me how to be an artist. So I thought, right, artist. So I went out and I did a diploma of fine arts. Great, love it. But I think I'll become a teacher. So I went out and did an education degree, became a teacher. Did that for about 7 years. Started losing interest. Became interested in filmmaking. Studied filmmaking at TAFE. Told my principal I want to go part time as a teacher and pursue a bit of filmmaking on the side. She's like, great. 2 years of part-time, 2 years of bit of freelance filmmaking. My principal says, sorry, we're going to make you redundant. I was like, ouch, okay. I was hoping to kind of keep teaching a little bit longer at least, but they gave me a very handsome payout, and so along with a bunch of other teachers that were made redundant that year. So I was like, okay, well, great. I'll use this money and put it towards buying myself a little kit of equipment so I can shoot, I can edit. So I did that and then proceeded to freelance for the next few years. I should say this is about 10 years ago now that I got redundant and became full-time freelancer, right? So I did that. Next few years freelancing, I thought, I want to upskill a little bit more. Do I want to direct or do I want to edit? I thought I'll be able to get into the editing course a lot easier than the directing course. So I just did that at AFTERS. So I did 1 year of editing, stayed on at AFTERS and did a couple more years of screen business. So I did a master's of screen business. And I should mention that I met someone at the editing course at AFTERS who gave me a contact for the ABC. So I started doing a bit of casual news editing just on the side to supplement my income as a freelancer. And that all that was working pretty well, you know, 2017, 18 and 19, that's what I was doing. 2020 comes along and things get thrown up in the air a bit. And all my freelance work dried up except for one client and their freelance work increased. So I was actually doing okay. But it was during 2019, 2020 that I started doing a few shifts at 7:30 and midway through 2020, they offered me a full-time job and I was like, and this was at a time when the government was saying, there's a recession about to, we're on the cliff right now. We're going to go into a recession. So I'm like, sure. I'll gladly take the job of a full-time editor with you. And yeah, it's been quite fascinating and challenging ever since. Yeah.
That's so interesting. There's so many pivots there. It's amazing.
And then so you mentioned editor for now, have you got something else on the horizon? Are you already planning the next step or you're still sort of playing with a few ideas?
Well, I mean, everybody wants to be a director, I guess, because everyone has, you know, that inner control freak in them, I guess, that wants to, you know, not that I'm a control freak, but I would like to make sort of good quality films, short films, whatever that might be. I feel like I've got good ideas.
You do already.
Yeah. I've got lots of ideas. I should mention, probably going to bring it up at some point, but I should mention that, along that sort of freelance journey and the ABC, alongside all that, I started getting involved in Kino. So if you don't know what Kino is a monthly open mic film night in Sydney. It's been around since 2006. There are chapters all over the world. And it's non-competitive. The idea is that you turn up with your film, you screen it in front of an audience, and you network. You meet other creative, like-minded people. So it's creativity for its own sake, and there's no sort of judgment involved in that. It's just a welcoming kind of safe space for creatives.
A brilliant night out. We get to meet some incredibly interesting people and see some wonderful films and how they develop each time. It's an audience to get that feedback. And
that's right. And it was through a keynote, a regular keynote that I was able to meet Roxy, actually. So it's a great place I really felt like I'd kind of found, you know, my tribe, my people at this place. And so that really fueled my sort of creative drive to do interesting work outside of my, the corporate stuff, the weddings, the real estate videos, all the other little things that you do to get by. It's great just to do all that creative stuff for its own sake, but a lot of what you do in that kind of feeds back into your practice as a professional. So that was really, that was and still is a really positive aspect of that. But yeah, I would like to direct more, and I've got some ideas about some films. I'm kind of helping a friend out with a feature film script at the moment, so that would be good. I went to a screening last night for our friend Nick.
He's actually on the podcast.
Oh, is he? There you go. Fantastic. Look at that. It's all coming together. So yeah, Nick screened his short film last night. That was great. That was inspiring. So Yeah, I think I would like to try directing a bit more. And,
definitely. I have like six things for you to do, but yeah.
Roxy roped you into a slasher film yet?
Yes. Brian's been hearing about this for years.
Yeah. She has, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm ignoring the text, of course, but you know, that's... No, can't wait. Let the blood flow. Yeah.
We've actually found some locations, so it might actually be happening this year, but we'll see.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. I mean, like, the greatest thing about the film industry is there's so many different ways to get involved, you know, from real estate to wedding to, you know, all of that. But it's funny that you also have to have your own project. So for me, it's very much why I went into the admin role, so that I could do my passion projects outside of work and not have that feeling where I'm constantly hitting a brief. I think for me, that was just something I didn't want to do constantly. But you do crave that creativity and what's next and that next role as well, because I always thought I would be a first AD and that would be it. Yeah. But, you know, you actually pushed me into directing a little bit for my Just One Numpty movie, and that was so much fun and, you know, getting stuck in there.
Award-winning Numpty.
Yeah.
Well, Brian's films, he's actually got quite a few. He's been in quite a few festivals, which are awesome, and his short films are so well made. So I think when you talk quite humbly about your work, but I think it's incredible what you do.
Well, thank you. Well, this time I would like to actually put together a bit of a budget, you know, and kind of, because most of the stuff I've done in the past, I've sort of planned it out. I've had some storyboards, you know, and I think, yeah, I would like to actually sort of take it seriously and go, all right, I'm going to put a producer hat on here and, like, you know, organize proper catering and have a schedule and, you know, pay the actors, you know, and that kind of thing, you know.
Put into action that screen business for afters. I mean, I did a 2-day course doing something like that, and that was incredible. So,
that's right.
It has been I did producing. It's been a while. I'm putting my hat back onto what budgets will go where, especially in our current economy. I was talking to a grand person this morning, and I just flat out asked her, like, how much would I put for X, Y, and Z? Because it's just gone out of the window. And she goes, you're in the country, love. You can get that one for free.
This one. Valuable information there.
But you do talk a lot about your tribe, and I think that's incredibly important in every career. And Kino, you know, out and networking, you were actually running these events with, you know, Christina and your group of Kinites. So I think, and also going to a course and doing short courses and education and connecting with your ABC person, it's always those key connections that move careers forward, and I think that's an incredible way to do it. But also, I think you've taken it one step ahead by running Kino, like taking over Kino and doing those monthly events, because I know it was a lot of work pulling together movies every month and catering. The catering was always amazing.
That's all Christina. She does a phenomenal job with food. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you feel well looked after. Yeah. Yeah. I will say, just on that thing about, like the connections that you make, like, I think, like, when I was a freleancer, about 90% of the work that I got came about through one person, and that person was referred to me just offhandedly by my cousin, and this person just had so much business that they didn't have time to do it themselves. Like, oh, here's a fashion shoot for industry kids, can you go and do that? Oh, here's a real estate thing over there, can you do this one where you have to fly down to Hobart? Yeah, cool. Oh, I've got this one for the fashion designer Camille. I'm like, no, I don't know Camilla. I know her now, she's like huge. And I can't make it. Can you go and do it? It starts in like an hour on a tall ship out in Sydney Harbour. There's going to be a bunch of, you know, gorgeous models on there, you know. I'm like, okay, sure, right. So I got up, all from this one person, and also some really sort of long-term clients like O Media. I did a lot of work for out of home media, and they were fantastic to work with, you know. So it's really surprising, you know, where sort of the business can come from or where the opportunities can come from. Obviously, you know, you back that up by following through and being able to do a decent job, of course. It's not just about the connections, but that was one of the most surprising things that I found in the scary world of freelancing, is that you don't know where the business is going to come from. Yeah,
you almost have to learn on the go as well, because every situation is different. You're on a boat, you've got to learn how to stabilize. If you're turning up an hour before, how do you charge your batteries on it? Like, all of the questions I now have for you.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I found out early on that, you know, you always need empty cards and full batteries, you know. So at any given time, just make sure that those two things, boxes are ticked. And that you've got everything packed properly. If you do have an emergency shoot, like on a boat in the harbour, then you can just run out and do it. So
that's awesome.
So if we get you to put your editor hat back on for a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So if you had, back in your early career, decided editing was it, this is what we're going to do, what would be a faster path for someone to get to a similar role to what you're in now?
Before I became a professional in this area, I did kind of just do it on my own. Like I just bought a really cheap camera. I got a copy of Sony Vegas, I think it was, which is this editing. Great, great program, actually. I thought it was really good. It's very cheap. So I got like a cheap camera, cheap software, and I just kind of tinkered around with it in my spare time. So I got used to it and I learned how to troubleshoot on my own, and just learned how to kind of develop not a style so much, but just get a sense of, you know, the rhythm of editing and the craft of it. And I feel like that time, just allowing myself to play around and explore, was so valuable later on when people are suddenly coming at you with deadlines and technical problems that get thrown at you, like with the million different codecs that exist in the world that, you know, don't always, you know, play nicely, you know, with your computer, you know. I kind of learnt about all of that kind of stuff. Like, I used to author my own DVDs as well. Like, I had a great life, a very great social life when I was in my 20s. Yeah, because like there were some films that weren't available on DVD, right? So just for my own personal thing, I would put them on, create my own menus, which I ended up using that in my line of work later on as a freelancer, because some people still wanted DVDs in the mid-2010s, you know. So
you got to make a wedding, you know, intro to go to the different things. And
yes, that stuff's really valuable. So I think it's just important just to start making your own work however you can. Like through Kino, find like-minded people as well. So you can learn how to, you can learn off each other, and you can also learn how to communicate ideas, in a diplomatic way, I guess, because, you know, creative differences can get pretty tense at times, and it's important to know how to kind of accept and take on constructive feedback. Even if it's not constructive, you've got to sort of translate it into something constructive so that you can so that you can use it, you know. I'm not sure if that really answers the question so much, but
I think it does, because in this day and age there's so much available to you to do that whole process quicker. I did the same thing, but with family videos. So I was like saving my home videos and like trying to edit them. And this is like editing things that my mom had made different colors randomly, or fixing things that came out of a container that was dropped in the ocean. So I was fixing water damage on actual tapes and things like that.
Yeah.
Those personal projects that you learn so much from, and you never actually know that it actually might come in handy in another job. It always does. Those, you know, understanding the different codecs, understanding how to deal with different people, different relationships, how to edit your own crap, because sometimes it is because you're still learning, you know. Some of the worst footage I think I've ever edited is my own. And you learn
from amen. Absolutely. And look, I think the first like serious attempt I made as an editor and as a shooter for that matter was just filming a mate's bucks party. And it wasn't anything, you know, lurid or anything. It was just a bunch of dudes, you know, going out doing paintball or something and then going have a few drinks or something. But I brought my camera along and I filmed it all, and then I attempted to edit all of that together. And once again, I put it into a DVD. But yes, it took so long, and I was just shooting aimlessly, really. I just had no idea how to construct a sequence of shots, how to tell a story visually or anything like that. But just by doing it on my own and giving myself the time and the space to explore and play around, was invaluable. You know? And I think it also helped when I did go to study film at TAFE and at AFTERS. You know, I was able to come in with questions. You know, I'm not sitting there sort of passively absorbing information.
It's that question of film school or no film school. And I actually think it's the mix. If you actually go into film school with a little bit of knowledge, with an apprenticeship or your own personal project or anything under your belt, you ask more specific and more intense questions. It's the same with volunteering before you go into a role that you're interested in. If you go and volunteer and support in a different industry, you learn a bit more about it, so that on the day that you start that new job, that 6-week training period actually goes back down to 3 because of the constructive questions you're already asking.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you help your teachers at the same time, which double bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've had great experiences when I've studied, and also had great experiences just sort of on the job. Like I remember volunteering with a wedding videographer, like one of the top sort of wedding videographers. I guess at a time when DSLRs came out, and it was like, oh, wow, we can really, you know, we can really make your wedding look like magic. It doesn't look like it's shot on a handy cam, you know. And so I just hung out with this amazing videographer for a day. He was shooting on a 5D Mark II, and he had a belt with, you know, 50 mil lens, a 24 mil lens, and some other 72, like all these lenses. And, you know, he had a little Steadicam and a monopod, and he showed me all of these techniques, you know, that I still use to this day. And it was just so informative to understand, you know, I guess the kind of pace that you have to work at, and also the level of focus that you have to have. Like you're running around sweating, you know, you're eating Mars bars, just trying to keep your energy levels up. But then when it comes time to shoot, you're just going to kind of center yourself and go, right, okay, I've got to make sure it's in focus, the composition's good, and I got to hold the shot for at least 10 seconds. Otherwise the editor doesn't have anything to work with. That kind of extreme, the sort of working within those extremes, I found was quite fascinating. And
filming something that's so important to someone, and there's all these dramas going on, and you're trying to get the shot, smile.
Yeah. It's the stakes. Yeah. I don't know if the stakes could be much higher unless you're working in Hollywood for some big budget, but you know, you could reshoot that if you want to. Someone's wedding. It's pretty hard to reshoot, although I do know some people who have actually reshot vows before because they stuffed up on the day, but very rare.
The technology part is interesting because you talk about your career and how much technology has changed, and is there to keep up to date with that, do you find you have to actively go out and keep up to date, or do you find if you're in a current job and there's mechanisms to keep you up to date with technology, or you need to actively go out and seek it?
So I guess there's two kind of areas of technology that I have to kind of focus on, or that I have focused on. One was with my, my working life as a freelancer. So, and now with the ABC. But when I was a freelancer, I was a real gear kind of nerd. You know, I loved trying to find out about, you know, the different specs of all the different cameras, all different brands, you know, which cameras handled color in different ways and which cameras, you know, you could shoot flat on and you could, how much you could get away with in post, you know, what was the top ISO that you could use before it got noisy, you know, all those intricate kind of details. For some reason, I really loved learning about that. And so I just read and did all this research about cameras and equipment like about 10 years ago. And so I just got instinctively familiar with the technical limitations or the important parameters in any case that you have to keep in mind when you're purchasing a camera or when you're going to hire a camera, for example. After a while, I found that doing all that research just really gives you a bad headache and it gets really annoying. So I kind of backed off. But I find now that if there's a new camera that comes out, I kind of just quickly check its specs and go, all right, that's probably going to handle low light really well. It's got good stabilization. What kind of mounts it got? I just kind of just quickly check it out and have a pretty good understanding of where it's at because I've done all that research in the past. You know? Yeah. So I find that it's not too hard to kind of keep up. But I think what's most important as a freelancer anyway is you should have a really good kit of your own that you know how it works, you know its limitations really well, so that if you do need to go out and shoot something, then you know it really well. I really don't like doing a job, going and hiring a camera that I've never used before with the expectation that, oh yeah, well, if I understand how to change the aperture, the ISO and the shutter speed and the white balance, and I know where the record button is, then that's it. Cameras have their quirks and you've got to familiarize yourself with that. Otherwise, what can happen is what happened to me a couple of months ago when I did a concert shoot. I had my camera, which is an A7 III, Sony A7 III, and I hired a camera, which was the A7S III. Right now, them side by side, the A7S was doing a wide shot of this concert and my A7 III was doing a tight shot roving around. After about an hour, my camera, the A7 III, was starting to overheat and it was protesting at me saying, you have to stop recording now, kind of thing. And I'm like, just hold on for a bit longer. trying to keep it cool somehow. I'm not kidding. I was literally blowing it, desperately trying to keep it on. And eventually I had to turn it off. It just kept stopping recording. And so I turn it off, take the battery out, I'm like blowing it, and the battery's hot. So I put another battery in there and so just kind of stumbled over the line. And that was the first act. The second act was another hour, so it was a bit of a nightmare. But the A7S just kept going. No heating at all. Just kept going and going and going. And that was the camera I hired, right? So that was fine. My camera, which I'd never really pushed it like that before, and I didn't expect that to happen because it's never happened to me before with other cameras. No. We made it work. I shot everything in 4K, so I was able to punch in with the wide and, you know, kind of...
You're a good editor. So.
I fixed it in post. Yeah. When it comes to the ABC, there isn't really much that changes because if you change the software on one computer, then it has to change across the whole country, basically. Everything's been standardized for the majority of news programs. Unless you're working on Four Corners or Foreign Correspondent, those ones use like Avid and Premiere Pro. But all the other news programs use a program called Grass Valley Edius. Have either of you heard of Edius?
No.
No, you haven't. No.
Sounds like fun.
You haven't heard of it. Because no one knows what it is except for us editors at the ABC. And I only found this out recently, but when we signed on to get Edius as our program of choice back in 2018, I think, we became Edius's biggest client in the world. So, but yeah, it's basically like a sort of a stripped down version of Premiere Pro, okay. I guess, you know.
But you're going to say iMovie 10.
Sorry?
I thought you were going to say iMovie 10.
Sometimes I wonder what would be better. But look, Edius is a pretty reliable and solid program. Doesn't have all the bells and whistles that, you know, I would necessarily like. But up until a couple of months ago, we had that same program and that same version of that program since 2018. Right? It just had not upgraded. And it was about like a few months ago when we upgraded all of our actual computer workstations, which are now like insanely powerful. Like they've got like 128 gigs of RAM and they've got these gigantic NVIDIA cards in them, like more power than I ever thought we would ever need. I'm not complaining. It's just, it's insane. But once again, it doesn't actually change much to our workflow, because that's the way they like to make these changes. They'd like to make it so that everything just keeps going, you know, because we've got 24-hour news churning out all the time. We've got shows to put out every night, and you know, if something stuffs up, and sometimes it does, then you know. I mean, Sydney once a few months back just completely shut down. Like nothing could get out. We couldn't put any like packages to air. It was everything we had to do was live. So we could have like live presenters or live interviews, but nothing that was actually recorded and cut could go to air. So we then had to make arrangements with the other states. So we're like, hey, we're going to go up to you and you're going to broadcast from Brisbane or you're going to broadcast from Melbourne. So those days are always interesting.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good segue into our next question. What's your favorite thing about your job?
Well, I think I just like the sort of the challenge of it, in terms of like the creative challenge of it. I guess I'm just trying to make sort of day-to-day news, you know, look and sound as interesting and kind of cinematic as it possibly can. And these days we're in competition with every streaming platform on the planet. So we've got to, you know, really step up our game. So that's like having that kind of level of expectation is good, I guess. Most of the time, provided we can pull it off. And I wouldn't have said this before, but I think I kind of do like the challenge of a same day edit. Like I got one the other day. It was a story about Hunter Biden and how he could bring his, you know, bring Joe down in the election. And but you know, the Barbara Miller, the journalist, had written a really tight script. I mean, she's over there, so she's the correspondent over there. So she'd written it, everything was shot, done. She'd given us a script, all the vision, and she was asleep because she's on the other side of the world. And it was great. I didn't find out that I was cutting that until slightly like around about midday, I think. And a lot of the vision hadn't been properly put into the system yet, so I was freaking out a little bit at first because normally everything is there ready to go. So I just had to get all that sort of edit assist kind of work done. But you know, by like 1 o'clock or 1:30, I was like, right, everything's there. Got my ducks lined up. Just go for it. And I was quite surprised. I was able to get the edit done in about 2 or 3 hours. It was like a 6-minute package. And so, yeah, I was able to go up to the supervising producer. I said, yeah, I'm done. You can check it out now if you like, you know. So it was nice to kind of be able to get that done really, really quickly and to a pretty decent standard, I think. So that's a kind of a good challenge, I think. But I'm trying to engage a bit more with the producers early on before the shooting has started. And they're trying to liaise with me and us editors a bit more as well. So that's a different muscle that I'm trying to work, which I'm normally used to just
going with what you got.
Going with what I got, fixing problems, you know, fixing it in post, that whole thing, you know, and just kind of sitting there and being grumpy about it. You know, but they're coming up to me and saying, okay, well, we don't want to do that, so we don't want to give you problems, headaches in the future. What do you think? I'm like, okay, all right, that's going to be challenging. So, it's a good kind of new muscle to try and work. And then once again, it's sort of that director hat that I'm trying to work a bit more. So I'm trying to view it that way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Trying to think like a director.
Current job and putting in the steps of training for the one that you're aiming for.
But yeah exactly, yeah. Not that I plan on leaving 7:30 anytime soon or anything, but you know, just have something going on.
Keep learning, keep moving, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, trying to stay engaged, I guess. Yeah,
it must be such a wonderful feeling to, it's the endorphins you get when you finish a project, but you get to finish multiple projects quite a lot, and then it's shown to the, you know, the country. So that's just.
Yeah. And I should say that the other thing that it's great about working on this show is that they actually tackle like newsworthy issues, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, running around shoving mics in people's faces, you know, and, you know, chasing down dodgy used car salesmen or something. It's, you know, there's some really powerful stories. A few weeks back, I did this story about the live export industry and about how, you know, years ago, there were hidden cameras taken onto ships where they were, you know, moving cattle overseas. And the footage of the livestock on these ships was just heartbreaking. You know, like there's no air conditioning for these animals. They're just sort of walking all over each other. They're just covered in mud and feces, and some of them are dying. And they're sitting around they're dead. You know, sort of companions. You know, all that was fixed, but more hidden camera footage of what happens once they reach their destination came out. And so that was a couple of weeks of sitting with all of this really confronting footage, and going over it and having to manually blur it all, you know, so that it's consumable on air, you know. But, you know, that was a really powerful story. And I think that's something that, you know, you don't really get anywhere else. And I think it's really important to get that kind of thing out there. I really appreciate being around like some of the top journos in the country, really, like some of the smartest people you're going to meet, who are focusing on issues that matter. And I think it really helps you, as an editor, like, because you can take what you're doing seriously, and I think you can just kind of be more honest with yourself with it, and if you feel something for it, then you can channel that into your work, and if that comes through, then hopefully whoever watches it will be affected by it and understand that, you know, it comes from a place of honesty, I guess, if that makes sense. Yeah. So that's another good aspect of it. Also a very bad aspect of it, because you have to watch horrific stuff sometimes. And they do talk about that idea of vicarious trauma that you can get while when you're just being sort of assaulted with these really confronting images over time.
You're being hit with the truth that a lot of people kind of avoid with the news. Like some people who don't watch the news and things like that. You're sitting there looking at it over and over for hours.
Yeah.
How do you cope with something like that?
Well, I mean, while I was doing the live export story, I'd come home and my girlfriend was having a pretty rough week as well. So I said, we're just going to watch Pixar films at night. That's all we're going to do. Do we want to watch like The Walking Dead or something? No, nothing horror, nothing at all. I just need to completely zone out. Do something like that. Go walk the dog, meditate, you know. I haven't done this myself yet, but the ABC does offer, you know, counseling for this specific kind of thing. And especially for journos who are overseas, like we've got someone over in Morocco right now covering the earthquake, and you know, he's right there in the thick of it. He shot it and edited it himself, actually. So hats off to Tom Joyner for doing that. But it's a recognized sort of issue that has to be addressed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good they do offer that kind of support. Yeah. You know, it's like train drivers and things that witness things. It's the same thing. You're witnessing real life stories.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, that's obviously a really big negative. Is there anything else that you find in this career that isn't to your liking?
I think that's probably the worst of it. I think just being subjected to confronting stories and confronting content over and over is quite challenging. It's not like a deal breaker, you know. It's just something that's bad. You recognize that you have to do as part of the job. One thing I do miss about being a freelancer is just being out and about and being physically more active as a shooter, you know. So when you're either sitting or even standing at a desk, you know, it's stuck in one room the whole time, that can be pretty frustrating and bad for your health. So it's very important to go out and get some sunlight, otherwise you can't sleep properly at night. But just in terms of the physical, like sort of health aspect of it, that's something I've actually noticed happen. Probably also an age thing, but you know, being an editor certainly doesn't help that.
It's something that you're stuck. You kind of feel like, okay, I'm gonna just fix this next, and then the whole day is gone. And
yeah, totally. Yeah, it's I guess that is one good aspect about working on a show like 7:30 is that you can't really afford to fuss. You know, you've got to be brutal. Absolutely ruthless. And, you know, everyone's happy at the end of the day as a result of that. But, yeah. Yeah, I can't really think of anything else
that's frustrating good.
About that. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
That's good. More network in there for you for the unpleasant aspect.
Yeah. Totally.
Important, I think, to tap into those. A lot of people don't, and working in HR, like we spend a lot of time choosing these providers to make sure that there's, you know, the right amount of support when people need it. I just wish people wouldn't feel so guilty about putting their hand up and just, you know, taking advantage. We're paying for this service anyway. Like, get in there and use it. Like, even if the only thing you get out of it is, you know, a new breathing technique, at least you've got something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, we've had a few sessions with the psychologist as a team, just talking about like what vicarious trauma is, and we're talking about sleep. You know, how mm-hmm. you can get better sleep at night, and there's various sort of programs that they kind of run to ensure our physical and mental kind of well-being, which is always appreciated. Take advantage of it. Yeah.
definitely. So, going back into a sort of lighter idea of things, what advice would you give somebody who's thinking of entering the editing world, and if you want to also include the freelance world, because we've talked a lot about that?
Well, I guess it goes back to what I said before. I think it's probably best to just kind of start doing it on your own and learning on your own and being mindful that, yeah, when you do go to study it, then you've got experience to draw upon when you're asking questions and you're trying to direct your own learning. So I think these days the technology is so, you know, ubiquitous, like it's everywhere. So you can, you know, you can pick up your phone, you can start shooting it on your phone, you can edit on your phone. And even, you know, if you're still using like a Nokia phone, you can get like a really cheap SLR or mirrorless camera, and you can just have a go. I think that's probably the most important thing, is just to start learning. And like I said before, find like-minded people so that you can work together and build up a portfolio of work. And I think it's really important to be passionate about what you do. So if you find that you engage in filmmaking and you think you want to be a director, but actually you find, I don't know, maybe doing sound mixing is more your thing, then, you know, follow that passion and you'll become an expert at it. And if people, and also you'll develop your own unique style. I think that's important to, because if you find you're passionate about something and you become good at it, then you're going to develop your own style, and that will make you stand out from the crowd. Yeah. So I think that's probably vital information.
You don't lose, like if you go and do the sound, you're only going to be better at being a camera person because you understand that process. It's an entire puzzle. They all fit in together. They're skills that are completely transferable. And if you can understand what the next part of the pipeline is, you become better at anything.
Yeah, because it's a team effort. And even if you, yeah, and when you do try and, if also I think it's important to try and, to if you can't get paid to do the work you like doing, try and do the sorts of work that you like doing as well in your spare time, and using that as examples of what you can do. Because if you tell people, oh yeah, I can use Photoshop, they're suddenly going to bombard you with Photoshop requests, even if you hate using Photoshop, you know. So it's sort of wise to be careful about what you tell people you can do, and try to emphasize what you enjoy doing, so that they look at that and go, oh, well, I like that. Can you do more of that, please? You know, so that's, I think that's something I learned the hard way as a teacher. Because as a teacher, I got a sort of a reputation as being somewhat tech savvy as far as like digital filmmaking and design work kind of goes. Teachers would often come up to me for like technical advice, like IT support sometimes, because they didn't want to go to the IT department. That was beyond my pay scale. So I learned after that, you know, you've got to be careful what you say you can do, or just try to emphasize what you want to do and try and, you know, sort of go towards that.
Yeah, you do kind of, you learn that the hard way. Like, I'm trying to make a horror movie and that's what I'm known for, but man, I'm more of a sci-fi person if you ever ask me.
Okay. Great to know. See, I didn't know that about you, see?
Yeah.
We've already heard about a lot of your education and different courses you've done, so I'll leave this question quite open. Is there any particular education you would highly recommend, or... is there just a book or a blog or just something small that you want to let people know about that you've found very useful?
I think, yeah, most tertiary education institutions are great, but they're, I think they're really only as good as what you can kind of get out of them. As I said before, you know, try and go in being curious with your own experiences and questions, and then you'll get a lot more out of it. I think I have a slight regret about the Masters of Screen Business course that I did. I think I should have gone in with a clear idea about what I wanted to get out of that. But yeah, man, I mean, in terms of education elsewhere, I mean, there's a bajillion podcasts out there that are fantastic. There's a couple of great screenwriting ones. There's the Screenwriting Life. There's Script Notes. That's fantastic. I'm listening to this podcast called Team Deacons right now. So that's Roger and James Deacons. And they interview all sorts of people, not just cinematographers. They interview directors, writers, costume designers. They're all fascinating. And I think maybe trying to understand, like we touched on before, trying to understand different roles and different, all the different skill sets that are required to come together to make a film. Even if you don't end up, you know, working with all of these different kinds of people, if you're making something really, you know, like a zero budget short film of some kind, it's great to know that that is a role that those skills or that kind of input might be needed. You know, you might need someone to do props, or you might need someone to do makeup, or you might need someone to, you know, to be actually good at recording sound. You know, maybe you should pay that person and just film it yourself, because, you know, sound is so important. I think that's something that's really important, is to understand the different kinds of roles that come together to make a film.
There are so many of them now, and there's like even intimacy coordinators and health and safety side of it. There's so much.
There's so many, there's so many great books out there. I mean, there's this one called The Filmmaker's Handbook. I think I can't remember the latest edition, but it came out like a few years ago. It covers sort of everything when it comes to, like, it's a few inches thick, but it covers everything from script writing to shooting to post-production to sound. Very technical, but brilliantly written, like so easy to read. And I can't recommend that book nearly enough. There's heaps of other books. I could give you a list if you want, and put up elsewhere.
Probably. But,
we
do. We're trying to put together show notes for all the podcasts at the moment, and trying to also collect a few more resources for the person that signs on to listen to this. So yeah, anything you have, send it across to us, definitely.
But I think there's a lot of great, like, filmmaking kind of podcasts out there, and it all comes down to storytelling, right? So if you can understand storytelling, I think then everyone's connected that way. That's the blueprint. So if you can understand storytelling, then that will greatly empower you as an editor, I think.
So our last question is, do you have any quotes that inspire you?
I thought about this. I don't really have any, like, quotes per se, but maybe it is a quote, actually. But I remember back before I was involved in sort of film and TV production and teaching and all that, while I was still aspiring to be an artist, my dad gave me this book from an art school that he went to. It's a book called Drawing Power, and you can't get it anywhere, because it was a book written by the teacher of the Paddington Art School for his students specifically. And it was an incredible book that I still read now. I have a copy of it still here. It's only very short too, but it was like brilliantly written, and it really made sense for me about what the purpose of art is, and it completely kind of validated and molded and shaped my approach to why I think everybody should be doing art. So I'm a real evangelist when it comes to this. I remember one thing in that, one quote in that stuck out, and that is that that you are more important than any artwork that you could create. So having that kind of attitude means that, you know, you don't get precious about your work. You know, you produce it, you make it, and, you know, you just kind of look at it as a bit of a work in progress, you know. And if you happen to come out with something that is great, then sure, fine. If it doesn't work, then that's fine. Just discard it, you know. They're just kind of temporal kind of objects, you know. They'll pass, you know, but, you know, you are far more important than anything you create. And I think that attitude is really important because, you know, making art can be very confronting. It can be deeply personal. Even for something like Current Affairs News at night, you know, you really can invest a lot of yourself in it. You really try and put your best foot forward, and you know, it's 6:45 at night and someone comes along and they're like, yeah, it looks great, but we have to cut it for time. You know, and you spent hours and hours and hours, you know, working on this. Yeah. I just go, well, look, I'm more important than this. it's a bit of a coping mechanism. So it's like, look, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Just park it on the side, take it out of this story. But whatever you learn from that, you know, you can put into the next story. You know, it's just a way of, it's kind of a coping mechanism, I guess, for how to deal with, and to deal with criticism, I suppose, but also just knowing, you know, where your values should really lie, you know, that you are more important and the people around you are more important than whatever they produce, you know. So that was something that...
I think it's true to any job. You spend so long working in any job and it really is more about you and your family.
Yeah.
Talks to that self-care again, you know, looking after yourself and making sure you're at your best. It's going to impact your work as well. Like, you know, if you take it to heart too much, you'll quickly get over that job. So it does talk to
yeah, this. Yeah. And it can be really hard at times when you're sitting there, like as an editor, with people sitting over your, standing over your shoulder. They might not even be looking at what you're doing. They could be on their phone. But if they're standing there, you can feel their presence and you just feel the judgment emanating, you know, even if there isn't any. Which is actually a good experience, I think, to do as an editor is if you haven't edited in front of someone else before, just get someone else to stand in the room with you, and it changes the way you look at what you're cutting. It completely changes how you edit, I think, and for the better. I think you become far more ruthless, I guess, and your senses are sharpened, so you really, you know, you cut with purpose. Yeah,
you don't procrastinate as much.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, oh, I know what I'm doing.
yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end. So, thank you very much, Brian. It's been fantastic having you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Thank you.
You've been listening to Roxy and Nate. Thanks for tuning in to A to Z Jobs. And always remember, it's your career and it's up to you to shape it. So dream big, make bold moves, stay curious, and keep exploring. Check out our website at thecareerchangecoaches.com for more resources, tools, and upcoming training.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. Don't forget to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode of A to Z Jobs. Remember, your dream career could be just one episode away.